Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never. And folks, you didn't hear the final chatter between Paul and I regarding yesterday's show, but I thought it was actually a really good show because we really, I think we did a pretty good job in providing a lot of connecting the dots, providing the overall view of where we are. So if you didn't hear yesterday's show and you're going to hear today's show, you're going to be hearing a third document of a series of five documents that literally lay out the path. This is the breadcrumb crumb that Madison and Jefferson gave us of how we hold our government accountable. This is truly divine because it wasn't just them. As a matter of fact, Paul, welcome back, Paul, by the way.
Oh, thanks.
You probably remember, you might remember, in the ratification debates, there were discussions actually in the ratification debates, and I believe it was Virginia, that talks about interposition.
Okay.
And so when we look at the concept of interposition, there were a couple, but Mr. Parsons really comes to mind, and this was out of the Virginia ratification debates, or no. This was actually out of the Massachusetts ratification debates. I think there was somebody else that said it, maybe Pendleton. But Mr. Parson basically said this: "But there is another check founded in the nature of the Union, superior to all the parchment checks that can be invented. If there should be a usurpation, it would not be on the farmer and merchant employed and attentive only to their several occupations. It will be upon 13 legislatures completely organized, possessed of the confidence of the people, and having the means as well as the inclination successfully to oppose it. Under these circumstances, none but madmen would attempt a usurpation. But, sir, the people themselves have it in their power effectually to resist usurpation without being driven to an appeal to arms." In other words, he's talking about interposition. Because the people can then go to the public servants and hold them accountable. He says, "An act of usurpation is not obligatory, it is not law, and any man may be justified in his resistance." But taking it further, he's basically laying out that, we have another check, and it's not really single state nullification, it is a unified state of the 13 states, as he points out, that it won't be the usurpation upon the farmers, the merchants, it'll be actually upon the state houses of federal usurpation. And so all we have to do is keep them in check. We actually have the ability to keep them in check.
I found this in the Massachusetts debates, and I love it. I have highlighted this even more highly because it goes right along with these resolutions.
Yes, and actually I believe the term interposition was used in Virginia. I don't have that citation here with me. But no, I don't have it with me, yes, unfortunately. Anyway, so moving forward, we kind of wrapped up the Virginia resolutions. We kind of gave the timeline yesterday of how that went out in December. And now Thomas Jefferson is responding because the Kentucky legislature is going, "Wow, we're getting beat up here. Hey, help. What do we do now? How do we answer these insinuations and these insults?"
So in other words, the other states are responding to Kentucky.
Yes, and Virginia. They both responded to both states. They all responded to both states, right.
Okay.
And so Jefferson basically pins a next set of resolutions, not a final set, another set of resolutions to close the matter. And this is what he says, folks. And we're going to go ahead and read this through in its entirety. So go ahead, Paul.
Okay. So this is the 1799 and resolutions in General Assembly, correct? Okay.
Yep, correct.
The representatives of the good people of this Commonwealth in General Assembly convened, having maturely considered the answers of sundry states in the Union to their resolutions passed at the last session, respecting certain unconstitutional laws of Congress, commonly called the Alien and Sedition Laws, would be faithless indeed to themselves and to those they represent were they silently to acquiesce in principles and doctrines attempted to be maintained in all those answers that the Virginia only accepted. To again enter the field of argument and attempt more fully or forcibly to expose the unconstitutionality of those obnoxious laws would, it is apprehended, be as unnecessary as unavailing. Okay?
Yep, keep going. And this this right here is a big, you know, smack. I mean, this is a roundhouse, or this is an uppercut. This is a good blow to these other states.
This is a smackback,
right? So, okay. And by the way, you know, they're coming. They were actually coming back and saying, having maturely considered the answers of sundry states, a variety of the states in the Union. Okay, and then he points out, oh well, that of Virginia only accepted. In other words, Virginia was the only one that didn't insult us.
Correct. You know, the other thing about these is that the people who are claiming that the resolutions of 1798 were a draft, you can see that these are clearly different. This is a response to the other states.
Absolutely, these are communications. Absolutely.
Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. So. Next paragraph. We cannot, however, but lament that in the discussion of those interesting subjects by sundry of the legislatures of our sister states, unfounded suggestions and uncandid insinuations derogatory of the true character and principles of the good people of this Commonwealth have been substituted in place of fair reasoning and sound judgment. Our opinions of those alarming measures of the general government, together with our reasons for those opinions, were detailed with decency and with temper, and submitted to the discussion and judgment of our fellow citizens throughout the Union.
Okay, so they sent these things out. They were sent to the state legislatures, but these were promulgated to the people as well.
Yeah, they must have been somehow published.
Well, it says right there.
Yeah.
Submitted to the discussion and judgment of our fellow citizens throughout the Union.
Wow.
Okay. Go ahead.
Whether the decency and temper have been observed in the answers of most of those states who have denied or attempted to obviate the great truths contained in those resolutions, we have now only to submit it to a candid world. That sounds familiar. Faithful to the true principles of the Federal Union, unconscious of any designs to disturb the harmony of that Union, and anxious only to escape the fangs of despotism, the good people of this Commonwealth are regardless of censure or calumniation. Okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
Least, however, the silence of this Commonwealth should be construed into an acquiescence in the doctrines and principles advanced and attempted to be maintained by the said answers, or least those of our fellow citizens throughout the Union, who so widely differ from us on those important subjects, should be deluded by the expectation that we shall be deterred from what we conceive our duty, or shrink from the principles contained in those resolutions, therefore.
Okay. So the word calumniation, right? That word, so if you look it up, the definition of that word, it says so much. That one word says so much, because this is what it is. The act of calumny, or the second definition, false accusations of a crime or offense, or a malicious and false representation of the words or actions of another. In other words, these other states were basically accusing them of committing crimes.
For speaking out?
For speaking out against the federal government. In other words, they were basically saying, hey, maybe you should be arrested. I never read the responses, but the way they're responding in these very specific words, and as you just went through this second line here, that this basically it goes, because you just ended it up with the citizens throughout the union who so widely differ from us on those important subjects should be deluded by the expectation that we should be deterred from what we conceive our duty or shrink from the principles contained in those resolutions thereof.
You know, these accusations sound so familiar even today, G.R.
Oh, absolutely.
And mm-hmm. and Jefferson, you know, Jefferson's, he doesn't back down. This guy is not a wuss.
No. No, he's not. And he's you know, I don't want to say he's a drama queen because he uses, I mean, very strong language. I mean, you know, a drama queen is a person that really accentuates, you know, their actions and so forth. And that's all I'm really trying to say. I'm not trying to use it as like a Karen or something like that. Here's a man that really does understand, and he's accentuating with a very powerful vernacular, very powerful language that he possibly can without mincing any words in I think, defending the Constitution and defending the honor of all good citizens of the Union.
Sure. And remember, this is the same guy that wrote the Declaration of Independence. So he is not simple with words.
Nor does he have any history of running or hiding from a point in time where it needs to, when someone needs to stand up.
Right.
I mean, here was a man in 1770, before it was even fashionable, stood up in a court of law to defend a mulatto for their freedom.
Isn't that where the original words came?
Yes. We were all created equal.
Well, right. Yep.
The words "we were all created equal" came from that case. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay.
Okay.
So where are we now?
So we're on resolve that this Commonwealth number four.
Okay. Resolve that this Commonwealth considers the Federal Union upon the terms and for the purposes specified in the late compact as conducive to the liberty and happiness of the several states. That it does now unequivocally declare its attachment to the Union and to that compact agreeable to its obvious and real intention and will be among the last to seek its dissolution.
Okay, so hold on.
Okay.
What is he saying here? This unequivocally declare its attachment to the Union. Remember that the words, the rightful, you know, it is the right of every state to nullify. In other words, is he saying that we're nullifying here? He's really laying it out clear that they may have read into, you know, we're thinking about leaving the Union.
Right.
Because, again, Madison clarifies later that a single state, if it nullifies, it needs to leave the Union. And he even points out, we'll get to this, folks. But he even points out that Jefferson believed that same principle too, which is why he did not call for nullification. He was only pointing to, you know, if it gets worse, we have a right to nullify and walk away.
But what he's actually saying when he is declaring, unequivocally declaring its attachment to the Union, he's saying we don't want to nullify. Right?
Correct. Correct. Correct, but he goes into, and we'll get into it coming down here, you know, okay. Ahead. I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, so I just wanted to point out that he's really drawn the line saying we're not nullifying, but he's going to clarify the point of nullification again. Keep going.
Okay. That if those who administer the general government be permitted to transgress the limits fixed by that compact by a total disregard to the special delegations of power therein contained, annihilation of the state governments and the erection upon their ruins of a general consolidated government will be the inevitable consequence.
Okay, so what he's saying is if we just kowtow, we continue to allow this to happen, they're going to erect a consolidated government. They're going to create a government that controls every aspect of our lives instead of very limited objects, a limited and defined federal government. So in other words, he's prognosticating. He's saying, if this continues, the consequences will be this.
Mm-hmm.
It took a long time to get there, folks, but he was right. Keep going.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Hang on, I lost my place.
Okay, that the principle and construction. Inevitable consequence that the principle and construction contended for a sundry of the state. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Okay, it will be that the principle and construction contended for by sundry of the state legislatures, that the general government is the exclusive judge of the extent of the powers delegated to it, stop nothing short of despotism, since the discretion of those who administer the government and not the Constitution would be the measure of their powers. That the several states who formed that instrument, being sovereign and independent, have the unquestionable right to judge of its infraction, and that a nullification by those sovereignties of all unauthorized acts done under color of that instrument is the rightful remedy.
Okay, one of the things I want to point out is, do you notice how he's separating these?
Yes.
Before, he would use a semicolon as a continuation, right? You know, a break with adding this and with adding this and with adding this. He's using colons, folks, which means boom. I mean, these are separate bullets. Boom, that this and that this and that this. Okay, so I'm just trying to point out, that this is... You know, this is more of a clenched fist than just a long run-on of ideas. Keep going.
Okay. That this Commonwealth does, upon the most deliberate reconsideration, declare that the said alien and sedition laws are, in their opinion, palpable violations of the said Constitution, however cheerfully it may be disposed to surrender its opinion to a majority of its sister states in matters of ordinary or doubtful policy, yet in momentous regulations like the present, which so vitally wound the best rights of the citizen, it would consider a silent acquiescence as highly criminal. That although this Commonwealth, as a party to the federal compact, will bow to the laws of the Union, yet it is at the same time declared that it will not now, nor ever hereafter, cease to oppose in a constitutional manner every attempt from what quarter soever offered to violate that compact.
Okay, so hold on here. What he just said in this very last statement, I mean, I got to highlight that. Because, I mean, this is all highlighted red with underlines, right?
Uh-huh,
I'm actually going to use some yellow highlight to really bring this out. That although this Commonwealth, as a party, as in other words, as a member of the Union, as a party to the compact, will bow. In other words, we will humbly bow to the laws of the Union. In other words, we're going to stay in this, folks. We're not divorcing. We're not seceding. Yet it does at the same time declare that it will not now nor ever hereafter cease to oppose in a constitutional manner. So what they just did was the constitutional manner. In other words, calling upon the states to join together in intervening.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, this whole concept of interposition and what they were trying to do is the constitutional response.
Mm-hmm.
Any questions on that?
No.
Not nullification, not calling for a convention, interposition.
He does use, where did he do this?
What's that?
He did use the word nullification.
Yeah. Keep going. We'll get to it. We'll get to it.
All right.
And it's up above, but we'll get to it again.
Okay. And finally, in order that no pretexts or arguments may be drawn from a supposed acquiescence on the part of this Commonwealth in the constitutionality of those laws and be thereby used as precedents for similar future violations of federal compact. This Commonwealth does now enter against them its solemn protest.
Okay, so in other words, they're now saying, well, we still protest. But right up above, you're absolutely right, in the very first red section, that the several states who formed that instrument, being sovereign and independent, have the unquestionable right to judge of its infraction, and that a nullification by those sovereignties of all unauthorized acts under the color or under the color of law or under the color, in other words, without the authority of that instrument, is the rightful remedy. In other words, how do you nullify a federal law? Does one state have the power to say you can't do that and we're not acknowledging that? No. You've submitted to the union that we'll all be submissive to whatever those things are, and we all have to hold you, the federal government, accountable. So in other words, until they can get enough of the states to actually stand up against these unconstitutional laws, either to stay in the union, you have to abide by them. You cannot single state nullify and stay in the union. So he's saying that, yes, we have a right of nullification, but we're going to stay in the union instead. Mm-hmm. Which is why he started that out with up above. He says that we are going to stay, but we hold it, you know, right here at the very bottom, that we, you know, we have this responsibility to do the constitutional thing, to call upon everybody to say, hey, are we seriously going to let them get away with this? They're killing right. us.
Correct.
And folks, we're there today. They're killing us. They're waging warfare against us. They're doing so many things that they have no authority to do. And most of these people don't even know or even realize how far outside the authorities that they honestly believe the authorities that they're exercising are legitimate. That's how bad it is. The illusion has become a reality, and the reality is we have all of the power to take back this constitutional republic and demand compliance to the rule of law. That's why I say, folks, it is, you know, without any reservation, that debt clock and all of our debt, the money that they spend that is not for constitutional authority. In other words, they're spending money on education. They don't have the authority. Energy, housing, health and human services, all of these things that they have no authority in that constitution to do, that is fraud. They have mm-hmm. no authority. So that debt, we're not legally accountable for. And the day we all wake up, and the day we cross that line and say no more, this fraudulent facade that you have created is ending now.
Wow. Not be easy, but it's really that simple.
It is. And I just, you know, I guess that we all need to be like Thomas Jefferson and draw that strong line and say, this is it. This is what we have to do. Anyway, okay, so again, as we kind of mentioned in the previous show, that this actually got sent out at the very end of the century, or actually not at the end of the century, because this is the penultimate year. The end of the century is 1800, right?
Right, correct. Okay.
So, but this is the year before the next focus on the next election. And so what we're looking at is we're actually going into break here. So what we're looking at is this. Okay, so the shift of focus is going to be the election, because now they couldn't get the states to do something. And so I want to wait till we come back, because this is aligned with what we're trying to do in this whole strategy of how we use elections as our weapon, as a tool. We'll be right back after this.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires two-thirds of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so now that we kind of look at how everything played out, they did the right thing. They got these committees going in these two states, and they couldn't get the other states to move. So what they did was they actually used the people to go after and hold their public servants accountable by petitioning them with the ballots. Basically, they got people to actually become champions instead of, you know, creating this myriad, because they didn't waste the time. They just got organized and they got people and started endorsing, kind of like what Trump did, because they had their credentials and Trump paid for his credentials. These guys paid for their credentials, as far as I'm concerned, by the work that they did, but Trump actually just used money.
So that's, now this is a part of the history that I'm not familiar with. So in other words, they got pushback from the states, but they somehow got the word into the states to the people who responded.
Right, because Madison, again, had already created the Republican Party.
Okay.
So even though it may have been a concept, it was also a growing brotherhood amongst people of a limited government, of a government that was going to abide by the law and not by compromise.
Okay.
That because we all agree we can do this, we will. And that's exactly what the Alien and Sedition Acts were. They agreed to do something that the law did not allow them to do. And that's why Jefferson audited those actions or those acts and said, hey, this violates this part of the Constitution. This violates that. And instead of taking them, so there's three courses of action that they could have done that they didn't. They could have sued them and gone into a federal court. But at that point, you would basically surrender your sovereignty to the federal court to let them choose.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think Jefferson had the faith, nor did he realize that that was appropriate or the proper thing to do. They may have been good men and may have gotten it right that one time.
Wait a minute. You're saying, okay, it may have been the right thing to do. This may have been something for the federal court to deal with.
Okay, no. I'm saying that they didn't do that. And the reason I said that the federal courts may have been good men and may have actually given them the right outcome, but it was not the proper method.
Ah, okay. I want to make sure I got that right.
Okay, right. So to be clear, they executed the proper method, and that's why they said that they will continue doing this constitutional process in the future.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he said.
Okay.
So they didn't use the courts. They didn't use a convention or to try to amend the Constitution to enforce it, nor did they call for single state nullification. They clearly said, we need to stay in the Union to keep this ship from going running aground. Mm-hmm. Because what happens when good states leave?
Well, it's just like anything.
Yeah, you know, it's when
good people walk away from something.
Right, when the rational people leave the room, it gets crazier and crazier. And the more insane the room gets, the more the remaining rational, whatever ration is left, you know, leaves the room. It just gets worse and worse and worse.
Mm-hmm.
which is why we need the calm heads, the rational people, the rational states to stay. We need these people not to become sovereign citizens. We need everybody to actually, you know, cowboy up and take a stand in support of the Constitution instead of getting people, for whatever reason, to run away from it. The Constitution is not the problem. And we have all of the teeth in the Constitution to hold them accountable. The oaths of office, the First Amendment right of petitioning government, to petition our public servants for the redress of grievances, and Section 3 of the 14th Amendment to remove them.
Mm-hmm.
So, with that, okay, so we kind of have wrapped up the Kentucky resolutions of 1799, which basically sets up the response. So this was Thomas Jefferson's response. This is how he responded. And, you know, kind of defending their position. And it's kind of interesting how, you know, he defended the fact that he led, that, you know, that Virginia, or actually Kentucky, was leading and doing the right thing. So, in other words, it was the tone of that, that response is a lot different than Madison's.
Okay. And, well, yeah. The other thing to know is, at the time, they didn't know this was Jefferson. Now, some people may have been familiar with his writing style, but this, to the people at the time, this had come from Kentucky.
Yes.
That's what the general understanding was, that these resolutions had come from the Kentucky legislature.
Yes.
Okay. All right. I just wanted to make that point.
Right. And so... that's fine. So I believe that the state legislature of Virginia had no idea that was coming from Jefferson. I think Madison really kept that secret. It was really well kept, because Jefferson and, you know, his ability to stay out of jail and to not become a martyr. I mean, if you think about it, it could have really gone south from there.
Right.
Okay. So now what's the date on the Virginia resolutions, or the report on the resolutions?
January 1800.
So okay, so in other words,
a month.
Madison takes a little bit more time. Jefferson was a page and a half in defending we did the right thing. Mm-hmm. Madison goes beyond that. He takes 5 pages, and he explains why these things were right. Because he wants to teach people why this is so important. So go ahead. And when he talks about the report of the committee, or the committee, he's really talking about the legislature. Go ahead.
Okay, so you want me to start right at number one, right?
Yep, number one. We're reading this, the whole thing, just like we did the last one.
All right. Report of the committee to whom were referred the communications of various state relative to the resolutions of the last General Assembly of this state concerning the alien and sedition laws. Whatever room might be found in the proceedings of some of the states who have disapproved of the resolutions of the General Assembly of this Commonwealth passed on the 21st day of December 1798 for painful remarks on the spirit and manner of those proceedings, it appears to the committee most consistent with the duty as well as dignity of the General Assembly to hasten an oblivion of every circumstance which might be construed into a diminution of mutual respect, confidence, and affection among the members of the Union.
Okay, so that's an interesting way of saying it. To hasten an oblivion. What's oblivion?
Scattered to the far reaches of the universe, you know, destroyed. Right?
Okay, so oblivion, in synonymous words, or into synonyms of that, forgetfulness, unconsciousness, stupor, insensibility, obliviousness, right? Awareness is an antonym, obscurity, and extinction. So to hasten an oblivion, to hasten... and to, becoming oblivious to of every circumstance, which may be construed into a diminution, in other words, reducing of a mutual respect, confidence, and affection among the members. In other words, you know, again, we're really trying to be affectionate and trying to do what's best for us.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I just, you know, the way he said this, most people would just think that, you know, unless you look at what each of these words meant, go ahead.
Okay. The committee have deemed it a more useful task to revise with a critical eye the resolutions which have met with their disapprobation, to examine fully the several objections and arguments which have appeared against them, and to inquire whether there can be any errors of fact, of principle, or of reasoning, which the candor of the General Assembly ought to acknowledge and correct.
Okay, so in other words, did we make any mistakes? The Assembly wants to know. You, and he's sending this to the Assembly, by the way. This is his report to them. So he's saying, okay, to the Virginia Assembly, because they go, hey, you know, we listened to you and we just took a beating.
Okay.
Now we're standing in jeopardy of being treasonous.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, Jefferson talked about these insults and these insinuations.
Right.
That was their response was pretty hostile. And now these men are going, hey, you know, can you help us understand what's going on? If, you know, and so he basically is saying right here that, hey, if there were some mistakes, you know, please let us know, because that's what they were asking for. So here is his report.
Okay. So now we're on number four, right?
Yep. And because what he does is he goes through some very specific parts of the resolution, and that's why he quotes them. So go ahead.
Okay. The first of the resolutions is in the words following. Resolved that the General Assembly of Virginia doth unequivocally express a firm resolution to maintain and defend the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of this state against every aggression, either foreign or domestic, and that they will support the government of the United States in all measures warranted by the former.
Okay.
Okay.
So, in other words, you know, we're already saying that we're a part of this union and we're doing a good thing here. Keep going.
Okay. No unfavorable comment can have been made on the sentiments here expressed. To maintain and defend the Constitution of the United States and of their own state against every aggression, both foreign and domestic, and to support the government of the United States in all measures warranted by their Constitution are duties which the General Assembly ought always to feel, and to which on such an occasion it was evidently proper to express their sincere and firm adherence.
Okay, so he's basically saying we had this duty and we had to adhere to doing the right thing. So keep going. So okay. In their next resolution, and then it
right.
quotes
in
the next,
next
one.
Resolution. Okay. Quote, the General Assembly most solemnly declares a warm attachment to the Union of the States to maintain which it pledges all its powers, and that for this end it is their duty to watch over and oppose every infraction of those principles which constitute the only basis of that Union, because a faithful observance of them can alone secure its existence and the public happiness, end quote.
Right. Okay, so all he's saying, and he's just basically restating what he said. So in other words, he's saying, okay, we said this, and this is why we said this. Mm-hmm. So how is this wrong? Keep going.
Okay. The observation just made is equally applicable to the solemn declaration of warm attachment to the Union and this solemn pledge to maintain it. Nor can any question arise among enlightened friends of the Union as to the duty of watching over and opposing every infraction of those principles which constitute its basis, and a faithful observance of which can alone secure its existence and the public happiness thereon depending.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. So again, he's kind of helping justify and explain that. And now he gets into the third resolution.
Right. The third resolution is in the words following, quote, that this assembly doth explicitly and peremptorily declare that it views the powers of the federal government as resulting from the compact to which the states are parties, as limited by the plain sense and intention of the instrument constituting that compact, as no further valid than they are authorized by the grants enumerated in that compact, and that in case of a deliberate, palpable, and dangerous exercise of other powers not granted by the said compact, the states who are parties thereto have the right and are in duty bound to interpose for arresting the progress of the evil and for maintaining within their respective limits the authorities' rights bestowed, the authorities' rights and liberties appertaining to them, end quote. Okay?
Right. Okay, so that's, again, it's just a repeating. It's a citation of the resolution. Now he's going to explain, you know, how is this wrong?
Okay. On this resolution, the committee have bestowed all the attention which its importance merits. They have scanned it not merely with a strict, but with a severe eye, and they feel confidence in promoting, in pronouncing, that in its just and fair construction, it is unexceptionally true to its several positions, as well as constitutional and conclusive in its inferences. The resolution declares first that, quote, it views the powers of the federal government as resulting from the compact to which the states are parties, end quote. In other words, that the federal powers are derived from the Constitution and that the Constitution is a compact to which the states are parties.
Okay. Now, he really, you know, so this right here, this next part of this report, paragraph 14, is huge. So go ahead.
Okay. Clear as the position must seem that the federal powers are derived from the Constitution, and from that alone, the committee are not unapprised of a late doctrine which opens another source of federal powers, not less extensive and important than it is new and unexpected. The examination of this doctrine will be most conveniently connected with a review of a succeeding resolution. The committee satisfy themselves here with briefly remarking that in all the contemporary discussions and comments which the Constitution underwent, it was constantly justified and recommended on the ground that the powers not given to the government were withheld from it, and that if any doubt could have existed on this subject under the original text of the Constitution, it is removed as far as words could remove it by the 12th Amendment, now a part of the Constitution, which expressly declares, quote, that the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution nor prohibited by it to the states are reserved to the states respectively or to the people, end quote.
Okay, so hold on.
Okay.
You got a question or a comment?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
I noticed that he's referring to what we call the 10th Amendment as the 12th Amendment.
So why, and I was going to point that out, there's a few things that need to be pointed out here, but why did he refer to it as the 12th Amendment? Because
I believe that they had been proposed, but the ratification had not been completed.
But see, those other amendments are still out there, and they could still be ratified.
You're right.
So they maintained all 12 articles as a part of the Constitution and only identified which ones had been ratified up to that point.
Isn't that interesting?
So in other words, it was imperative that they started, when they started going down the path of doing devious things, they did not want anybody to see that First Amendment. What is the very First Amendment? Those who have no scruples, the devious ones that took over government and started creating the facade, because they knew down the road that that First Amendment would become, would haunt them. And so hiding it, so what was the First Amendment?
I think that was the one that had to do with representation.
Yes, apportionment.
Right.
And so because if people saw that, then it would place context down the road to the 30,000, the strict number of 30,000.
Sure.
That the only way that that number could be changed to something, to representing something greater, would require an amendment. So how is it that we're being represented by one person between 700,000 or almost a million people today? Unconstitutionally. Congress has assumed this power and has created an oligarchy of 435 tyrants.
Mm-hmm.
That is why they called it the 12th Amendment, and they called all of those amendments out in the Constitution. They started changing how they would print the Constitution and all of its amendments by removing those that had not been ratified, because we could start learning something from amendments out there that hadn't been ratified.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, that stuck out to me like a sore thumb.
Right. Okay. So there's that, right? So
okay.
He pointed that out. But he also talked about the fact that the power is not given. Okay. So the position must be derived from the Constitution alone, and not apprised of the late doctrine. The federal power is not less than important and unexpected. The examination of this doctrine will be most conveniently connected with a review of the succeeding resolution. The committee satisfies themselves here with briefly remarking that in all contemporary discussions, now, what's he pointing to here? What is he pointing to that in all the contemporary discussions and comments which the Constitution underwent?
He's speaking of the debates, right?
That's right. In other words, he's pointing out that the way this compact was sold, it was constantly justified and recommended on the ground that the powers not given to the government were withheld from it. He's pointing to the fundamental principles of contract law, that this is how it was defined, and this is how we need to look at this. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Okay. Now, so folks, forgive me for getting so excited. I mean, I just start really straining to, you got to get this. I mean, here is a man who's not even a lawyer, but he's pointing to the fundamentals of contract law, that this is how it was defined. This is a fundamental term and condition. They can't just start taking on powers that they don't have. It was never defined that way.
Wasn't Madison a lawyer?
No. Actually, he was given an honorary JD from Princeton, but he never, you know, law was not his major.
What did he do for a living?
Serve. I believe he was he sought to be a public servant with his life. I mean, I think I've mentioned before that he prayed on his return. You know, he thought he was going to die. Because
right.
He had such, you know, these disabilities. I forget what it was. But, he prayed that he wished that he could serve the country, because he was unable in the during the Revolutionary War to sign up and be a part of, you know, the effort, the revolution. And so he just prayed that he could serve this country. And he did. And he did, because everything is, so he married into money.
Okay.
Dolly Madison had money. She was a beautiful woman. She was they were exact opposites. I mean, she was the, you know, probably the loudest thing both in beauty and in voice, the loudest thing in the room. And James Madison was a guy that never brought attention to himself except when he was standing at the lectern, when he was up there, you know, lecturing people and speaking on what needed to be done. And this is where he became such a commander, you know, in guiding, teaching. And this is what he's doing here. He's teaching.
He's teaching the state legislatures the nuances and the details of what they really need to understand that we all today need to understand. That's why these documents are, this isn't just a personal journal of Madison thinking about how things should be. This is a formal report to the state legislature of Virginia explaining the legal details of what, why, and how they had to do what they did. So in other words, do not brush these over. These are founding documents that are, you know, just as integral as the foundation itself. It's almost like an, you know, an extra reinforcement to the foundation.
Right.
And helping clarify that this is all and you can't go beyond this. So just like the ratification debates, become legal terms and definitions. And that's what he was doing here. He was providing further light and knowledge to how the states had to react when the federal government started overreaching their bounds.
Right.
And what's interesting is when they examined, we talked about this last week, when they were looking during the Federalist Papers of where usurpations would occur, they thought that they would first occur between the branches. Remember in the Federalist Paper number 49, it was about encroachments of powers, usurpations of powers from one branch to another. And they were thinking that the Congress would actually start encroaching upon the judiciary or the executive. You know, and so that's why it was brought up that the two branches would stand up against the one and actually, you know, get the will of the people or the sentiments of the people to support, you know, a convention for dealing with the breaches of the Constitution, not for amending it, but for dealing with the breaches thereof. And so, in other words, this interposition, this is what they're doing. They're very clear that they were calling for, and, you know, forgive me, John Birchers out there that have a sensitivity to the convention word, but they were looking to have a convention not to alter or amend the Constitution, but to enforce it. And if you're telling me that we can't get all the states in the room to enforce their own constitution, then, you know, what you're peddling is insanity. What you're peddling, you have no base. And so that's why when the John Birchers say, hey, you can't do that. I mean, these guys are Madison and Jefferson are clearly saying this is the only way we can do this. This is the only constitutional manner. So tell me who's right on this and why is it that people are refusing to go down this path? Folks, we have, obviously, there's four different directions you can go. This is not a binary discussion. It's not convene a convention or not convene a convention. There are two other paths. You know, it's not nullification is not another path. It is not, you know, going into the court. That is not an appropriate path. They didn't go down that path either.
Right.
They called upon their sister states, as Jefferson said, and tried to get them to convene into the Convention of Republic Review. Ah, and so we just end. How apropos. I mean, that was almost powerful. You know, it's almost like the lightning striking as I said that. there goes the outro music. So, Paul, we will have you back next week. And we'll kick off where we left off here for this dialogue on Madison's report. Folks, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review, so please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org and go to the contributions page, and you can become a listed supporter of Liberty.